Welcome to Codecast. We're a podcast that focuses on everything tech, and we give you an idea of what developers, startups, and creatives are up to in Zambia and across Africa. Every 2 weeks, we explore different topics and applications of technology in the real world. Every episode is brought to you by Agora Code Community. For more information, visit agoracode.community or follow us on Twitter at @CodeAgora.
This is Jobriyan Wundawunda. I'm a developer at Bongo Hive and you're listening to Codecast.
Welcome to episode 17 of Codecast. I am one of your hosts. My name is Mukuma and I'm here with three other people today. Two regular, one for the first time.
Ooh, guest.
Yeah, we have a guest.
Technically, it's his second.
Yeah, oh, it's second technically time, second yeah. time, yeah. yeah. He's been here before and he was silent, very silent on our feed. Please take the survey and give us feedback on whether you like the podcast or not. We would really like to know for sure if we're doing the right thing. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not supposed to.
Yeah, Mukuma believes in his past life. He was a singer. Which one? I have no idea.
Past life?
Mm. Yeah, we're talking about like, is it Buddhism? Anyway, we're talking about reincarnation. Whatever religion that's from, I don't remember. But if in your past life, you were a good person, right? You reincarnate into a much better person?
Yeah.
A much better person.
Yeah, you're a bad person. You're blessed.
No, you're blessed. So you get a better vision of you
Sounds
in the next
very
life.
Very black mirror-ish, but it's okay.
It's not even very black mirror-ish. I feel like it's very traditional. It sounds very traditional. Like we have a lot of this stuff in like our African setup as well. There's a lot of stuff that you really can't believe happens, and we digress. But anyway, if anyone knows about reincarnation or whatever, like this is a side note, just send us that 1 minute long voice message. Link will be in the description. Yeah. That's it. So before we get into today's episode, I want the guest to introduce himself and then we'll get started with the news as per custom.
I'm Jobriyan Wundawunda. Okay, I'm a developer, Bongo Hive.
Mm.
Yes.
Fancy Bongo Hive.
What's your programming language of choice?
Java. Yeah. I love objects. They're easy.
Silence in the room.
Oh, <man.
laughs> there's so many things wrong with what you just said.
Yes.
I can't even begin to point out what exactly. But you know what? I wish you're here for the episode with Dennis and Elias. They were kind of going back and forth about Kotlin and
Java.
And it was really interesting. So you should listen to episode 15. Of Codecast.
Okay.
That's if you haven't already. So there's like, that's like special for like Android developers and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll jump on that.
Objects.
Definitely. So, before we get into our topic for the day, we get into news. So, this is something we should have spoken about like way back. I don't even know why we waited till now to talk about it, since this news has been around for like a month now. Huawei's ban.
Look, man, I'm a huge Huawei fanboy.
You are?
Yeah, no, I am.
Okay.
No, this is just a temporary phone. My Huawei mate broke. Yeah, so look, it's affected me in a lot of ways, but we all know what's going on here. Well, at least I choose to believe that's what's going on here. But this is we're in the middle of a full-on tech war, and this is bigger than tech right now. I think it's very politically motivated, to say the least, and I think it's very obvious, to say the most. Yeah, ish, man. So many things I could say. But America. I'll start with one word: America. Yeah. Seems to be some sort of ongoing power struggle. China and the States, and at the end of it all, the ripple effect is felt by the users, us, the fanboys.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's hectic, but I don't think it will last long. I think we're seeing the end of it.
Hmm.
I'm being very optimistic, but I think it's slowly coming to an end.
Maybe just to give a bit of background on it. So last month, Donald Trump, US president, placed Huawei on what they call the entity list. So basically, this is a list of companies that are banned from dealing with American companies unless they seek approval from the US government. So the moment Huawei was placed on that list, it meant Google couldn't do business with them. Well, the chip makers, because Huawei buys parts from the US as well, those companies couldn't deal with Huawei. I think even Facebook has like removed all its apps from shipping with Huawei devices by default. Yeah, pre-installed. ARM is a chip maker. They've currently not doing business with Huawei. Amazon Japan doesn't sell devices on this on the store anymore. So like those, that's the kind of ripple effect that action kind of had. So Google still is still supporting Huawei for now. It's gonna take a while. It's more like a transition period, basically. Yeah. And there's a lot of speculation about what Huawei is gonna do about it. There's talk about their own operating system, which apparently they've been making for quite some time. There's been talk about their own Play Store as well, or their own version of the Play Store, which they already have in China, for example. But obviously, not being able to use
Google services,
will play a really big role in crippling devices, crippling mobile devices.
I don't know how they moved so fast, but I think they expected it. After I was at the ZTE, that mini ZTE, that major ZTE showdown they had. Apparently, Chinese smartphone manufacturers have been testing Huawei's Android version for some time now, so it's very interesting. I can't say, no one can say for sure what will happen in the next coming months. But one thing we do know for sure is that everyone is affected somehow. This trickles down to, or trickles up to 5G as well. So it's not just smartphones we're talking about here, guys. It's telecoms industries as well, and everything else they make.
Really interesting. But I can tell you something that happened. I think this was sometime this week or last week, because I think today is, by the time you're hearing this, today is like Tuesday. So like I'll say a lot of stuff. Anyway, we'll find a way.
As of 11th June. 2019.
Yes, as of 11th June 2019, Russia somehow has got entangled in this, and they have agreed to let Huawei build their 5G
network.
So, like, you know what I think? I think this is like a bunch of kids on the playground, like two kids aren't on the best of terms, and then there's this kid that enjoys seeing the other one suffering, and then just be like, you know what, I'll show them, come here, I don't
let's
really
team,
like
let's
you
team up.
But we'll team up just because we both like we can team up against this guy, and I don't know,
but it's very very political. At the heart of it is, this is not tech motivated. This has nothing to do with tech. This has nothing to do with innovation. That's the sad part. Tech is suffering, innovation is suffering, and I don't know, man.
And this is my point. I don't think innovation is suffering, because from this, right, Huawei has accelerated the need for them to develop their own operating system.
Yeah,
it may not work in the initial phase, but as soon as people start getting used to, because we all get used to, consumers, we get used to stuff and it becomes okay. Yes. It means they are slowly splitting from Google, and you know how dependent most device manufacturers are on Google.
I actually read something like that, that this could backfire. People trying to stifle, people in inverted commas, trying to stifle innovation, how it could backfire on Google.
Actually, Google is the one that said that.
Oh, they did, right?
Yeah, that Google was Google was saying this could backfire on the US because of the same thing. Huawei would develop its own version.
They'll still go ahead.
Because Huawei is not a small company.
No, it's not.
By any estimation, no, it's not a small company.
They will survive.
And they have the resources. So, I don't know, man. And if you look at how many Huawei devices are in Africa, Africa is a huge market anyway.
So, Oppo is also testing their operating system. So, you have firms like Oppo, is it Tecno, a bunch of Chinese firms are testing this operating system. China is the largest smartphone market. Okay. So, it's crazy. I've been hit hard. I'm affected. I won't lie.
You know, I don't know affected. what this effect was, but you look very distraught.
Yeah, man.
He does.
Yeah, life, c'est la vie.
So yeah, we'll keep looking at how things keep developing, I guess, and then we'll kind of follow it closely. I'm interested just to see what Huawei's reaction is going to be, what the Chinese government's reaction is going to be.
They seem very chilled, eh? Very calm, not hitting back.
I mean, even Huawei is willing to sign a no spy deal with the US. So
that's how willing they are. They did one with the UK, so they are actually in charge of the UK's 5G infrastructure.
We were talking about this on Twitter with a few guys after the announcement and people actually testing some of the speeds on the 5G network in the UK, and the speeds were staggering. But I was interested in knowing how much infrastructure Huawei had put into, because the reports were that Huawei was dealing with part of the core infrastructure. It didn't seem like they were
focusing on
everything. Yeah. So I was just curious to find out.
And that's also the tricky bit, because they are dealing with the foundation. Most of the world's 4G infrastructure is built by Huawei. To have 5G, you have to build on top of 4G. So you can't come with another manufacturer and build on top of 4G. It logically, and it just doesn't make sense. Okay? So somehow you still have to do with Huawei at the end of the day, unless you want to go back and build your own 4G infrastructure, then build your 5G infrastructure.
If there is some hope, there's reports that some parts of the US government want to delay the ban by 2 years, not the entire, anyway, sections of the ban itself, so that they can allow their US entities to kind of benefit from that relationship a bit more, because it will stifle not only Chinese growth, but Huawei's growth, but even some of the US manufacturing companies.
Sounds like Brexit. Tech Brexit.
We won't even get into Brexit.
Tech-Zit.
Anyway, moving on to the next piece of news. WWDC. And we're not talking about that because Elias
I'm glad Elias is not here.
Has already sent a recording which we're going to plug in.
Yeah.
What's up, CodeCast crew and listeners? First off, let me apologize for not making the recording this week. Circumstances beyond my control and all that. But this past week was WWDC, so I thought I'd give a brief reaction to some of the stuff that was announced there. First off, as an iPhone user, the thing I was looking forward to the most, of course, is iOS. And I've got to say, really underwhelmed. They introduced dark mode and a few other tweaks. They improved performance. They kind of improved the compression of the applications. So the applications are going to be smaller, which means it takes less time for them to load and that kind of thing. But overall, really underwhelming. If you're an iPad user, however, they brought in a bunch of new changes that I think people that own iPads are really going to enjoy. They are making it more of a computer than previous iterations, at least from a software perspective. So little things that a lot of people complained about are being addressed. For example, before the iOS 13, so iOS 12 and 12 point whatever, they wouldn't let you basically plug in a flash drive to the newly introduced USB Type-C and just, you know, take your files from there, import them straight into an app. A lot of power users want to just, you know, plug in a flash, especially when you're into stuff like photography. You plug in your flash, you import it into your favorite application, and you work on it directly there. You couldn't do that before. Now you can do that. other things like, you know, multitasking has been overhauled. Now you can have multiple windows. You can have more than one window from the same application. So they've introduced a bunch of things that are going to make it a lot more appealing to power users that were thinking of an iPad as kind of a middle ground between the iPhone and the MacBook. They also introduced the Mac Pro. So the Mac Pro is for you if you have $6,000 burning a hole in your pocket. Really pricey, but it is spec'd to all hell. I mean, this thing is really just it's a beast. Like you get terabytes of RAM. Like, that's not even an exaggeration. Like, you can spec it out to have terabytes of RAM. Personally, overkill. But if you're a power user and you really want to future proof and that kind of thing, I guess this is for you. They also introduced the Pro Display XDR, which is a 32-inch 6K screen. So it's gonna it's coming from Apple, so it's gonna cost you, of course, it's $5,000, and that's without the stand. Now, I've been called an iPhone Apple fan for the longest time. Can I just personally say, fuck you, Apple? What the hell is that? $1,000 for a stand. $1,000 for a stand. Okay? For context, the iPhone XS is $1,000. Okay? I could go on a rant, but I don't want to take too long. Anyway, overall, I'd say if you're an iPhone user or you appreciate iPhones in any way, this isn't a huge overhaul. If you're a Mac user, there are incremental, you know, changes and updates to things that you might enjoy. But this, for me, from where I'm sitting, looks like it was really targeting the iPad, because the improvements they've made to the iPad are really pushing it closer and closer to the Mac ecosystem. So power users are really going to like this. Other updates, you know, watchOS, tvOS, I don't really need to get into those right now. But yeah, that was what I thought about WWDC this year. I'm a bit underwhelmed, but if you own an iPad, I think you're going to really enjoy what's coming in iOS 13, or as they're calling it on iPad now, they're calling it iPad OS 13. Anyway, enjoy the rest of the show and have fun, guys.
Okay, so moving on into today's episode, I'm excited because Cynthia is going to tell us a little bit about what she does and why it's so important. Cynthia knows a lot about product management, and that's something that's very interesting because well, in tech, there's like a lot of fancy words for a lot of things.
Yeah.
So a product manager in other circles could be project manager, for example. What else could you be?
That's a funny thing. So there's still, there are some people who are still unclear on what is the difference between a project manager mm-hmm. and a product manager.
Okay.
So let me start with defining a product and a project. So a product is what you offer a group of people, that is a service that you're actually selling to a group of people, whereas a project would be part of your product development, which is it's activities that will help you build a product. So it will have the scope, it will have the budget, it will have the timeline, the start and end date. So that is a project. You utilizing the skills and the tools to actually meet a product that then you will offer your clients or a group of people. It can be internal mm-hmm. people or external people. Whereas product, say your company wants to build a mobile app, that is a product, right? Mm-hmm. So you will have one to oversee everything that will happen in that phase, which is to deliver a product in a profitable way that will be liked by the users that you're building for. That is product management. Whereas project, under that, you building a mobile app, say there's market research. So market research, you utilize skills like, who are the researchers we have? What are the tools do we need to provide to these researchers for them to research about the users we're building for? What do the users need? How much money are we going to be utilizing? Are we going to be working within the budget? What is the timeline for us to actually build this product? Hope I'm making sense.
Yeah. I feel I need to write this down. So
you know what? I feel like I've been a product manager at some point in my
and
life.
And you did not know.
Like, so wait, are we talking about everything from like UI, like user interface and user experience design, stretching into like the actual dev work?
Yeah, so that's the surprising thing. Yeah. A product manager is like the middle person. So you will have the UX, you will have the actual tech developing and whatnot, then you have the business aspect to a product, right? Okay. The product manager will sit in between. If you were to, in maths, let's go back to basic maths, sets.
Would use
circles, right? So there is an intersection between UX and the business model, right?
Yeah.
And then there is a business, or for the business model, there's an intersection with tech. Then tech has an intersection with UX, but in the middle there's an intersection for all the three. Now that's where the product manager sits.
So like the product manager is like a
design
thinking guru, sort to say.
Yes, they should know part of design. They should know part of, they don't necessarily business. Have to be like experts, but they should know the fundamentals of designing, of developing, and then on the business aspect, what we are developing, is it in line with our business? Are we going to get profit? And is it something that we'll be able to run with in the long term and still monitor and change when we need to change to meet our users or our clients' needs?
I find it hard to believe we use these kind of principles in the country, to be honest. Maybe it's because of like you know when we're always told there's like a theoretical manual you follow towards like doing certain things, and how people never really follow those things.
Yeah,
it feels like maybe I've just been stuck in places where that happens all the time. Like it's just a bunch of steps skipped and so on and so forth, and I just find it hard to believe, like, we actually practice any of this stuff.
It looks overwhelmed.
Yeah.
No,
I share the same sentiments, honestly.
Okay.
I think that goes with the environment we're in, man.
We
tend to overlook certain things. Yes, we tend to gross over a lot of things which, you know, could easily be solved.
Yeah, but then, something I could put across is, it also depends on what type of organization you're working.
True.
Product manager's skills, they can actually vary depending on the type of organization you're working for. Others, they will include the business model part, but you find other companies, they'll say, need you to just be an intersection between the, because also there's also the user part. You have to interact with the users, know what your clients actually need, and how are you going to still stand out in the market. So there's also marketing aspect. How are you standing out? Is your product actually something that will stand out in the overall market? Okay. And Mukuma is getting more overwhelmed.
Okay, Cynthia, as a developer, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm a developer.
Yes.
And part of my job is to suggest new ideas, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not really part of my job. I think it's a work hazard. What's it called? Whatever. Anyway, you get my point. Yeah. It's an occupational hazard, right?
Yeah. Mm.
So, at what point, right?
Do I walk up to
to being a product manager and being a developer?
Do I walk up to the CEO and tell him, look?
No. If I believe my idea will work, right? Uh-huh. Ideally, I come to you as the product manager.
Yes.
We have a conversation around
it.
And then like you decide feasibility, then you communicate that to the business, and then they make decisions, right? Uh-huh. Is that the process flow? Is that like a standard? Okay. I'm just trying to wrap my head around it, because for me, like you just mentioned something that I realized that I've actually struggled with in the past.
Yeah.
Is you have this pipeline of projects that are supposed to be implemented, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have ideas around the way it's supposed to be implemented that you feel like would work better. Now, in a situation where the intersection doesn't exist, for example, you don't really have a predefined product manager, quote unquote. And that's why I said I feel like I've been a product manager before, because now I've had to step into shoes like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really know I was. Like, how? Like,
okay, so
when the intersection is missing, like, how does it work?
So when the intersection is missing, that's why now you find team members. So I know, so let me clarify one thing before I go on. Product manager is not just strictly for the technology aspect. In as much as most companies that are really utilizing the product management role are those that are building software, there are other non-software companies that have actually decided to utilize it because they've noticed they actually do need that one person who will be an intersection for the different departments or skill set they need to actually provide a service or a product.
Would you call a developer evangelist a product manager, sort of?
No.
I think I would. I mean, it's at an intersection.
Yeah,
but then what is it?
Feedback from like the community.
But does he go further into sitting down and saying, okay, so we're building this product. Yes, these are our users. What features are we going to put into this product to actually satisfy our users? And then from there, on the business aspect with our business model, is it in line with what we want to build? Are we going to actually gain profit from it? Are we going to be able to monitor, evaluate, and continue over a period of time that is good enough? So a product does phase out eventually depending on the market that you are dealing with. So is it something that will bring in enough profit even when it matures to the end phase where now you have to phase it out?
If you put it that way, no.
Yeah, because I feel like we end at a particular point in that cycle. So like, yeah, I kind of get what you mean.
Yeah. Then to answer now your actual question as
without product managers.
So without product managers, now this is where you find an environment where team members will have to pitch in. So where you're saying you feel at some point you did actually do product management roles without actually knowing that that is what you're doing, because then there isn't a predefined person who's doing that. And why eventually they decided to make an intersection is because the team members will be eventually overwhelmed, because first you have the development part, but then you still have to suggest the ideas, and then you have to
Do everything.
Yeah, you have to literally look at everything. Is it in line with our business model? Do we have the users? And if we have the users or clients, is it going to be profitable? Is it something that will be, you know, we have a tendency sometimes with developers, because I mean, I have a background of, you know, being a developer, where we develop something without actually doing market research and it ends up being packed away. It's not used. So in a team where there's no product manager, yes, you will find the team members will take a chunk of it and share amongst themselves.
Yep.
Do you work with a product manager?
Myself? Yes.
Mm.
I think adding on to what Cynthia said, in a team where you don't have a product manager, mostly you find that the projects won't be delivered on time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you've got some misinterpreted data.
Yeah.
So you find that, okay, we thought this is what the client wanted, and then you go to deliver this thing because you thought that tech that you saw that was
amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing tech. So you need to have a bridge. So you'd find maybe people would still pitch in as developers, but they only go so far. Yeah, they don't go further into talking to users and all that. And that notion of deaf people and like the like a syndrome of not talking to people.
You know, deaf people are like a unique set of individuals. Like I think when you go to meetups, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's very interesting. Like you can't find people like that anywhere else. And it's interesting because they're like They're normal people. They're just like you and I.
Yes.
Yeah.
But when they are together, oh my God, it's like you're in a different, different
it's a different
place.
Atmosphere. Yeah. Yeah.
So like, and the most difficult thing is like translating their needs, right? Like, I'll give an example of stuff like APIs that mostly serve like developers. You know, we had like Rave, we're talking about Rave API last, in the last episode. The companies like those are, they're dealing with other businesses, but technically they're dealing with other, with developers, because developers will do all the integrations and stuff like that. So getting needs, their needs in terms of how onboarding is working or how an API works, it's actually harder than it seems, especially if you approach like a developer one-on-one, or you don't, you know, you don't meet them at their point of, you know. So I kind of understand when we talk about like the need for like an intersection to kind of understand both sides and that sort of thing. It's very interesting.
Because again, it's difficult. You're coming from tech and adding on developing, and then you move on from there to talk to people. It's kind of like a shift. Yeah. You need to shift, and then you talk to a layman trying to explain technology to a layman, and then you're in dev. You find that there's much difficulty in doing that.
Yeah. So if there you is now a have, lot of
difficulty. Yeah, there is a lot. Yeah, because this is why you find that you come up with somebody who understand both, they understand tech, and then they're able to interpret and then communicate with. Can I call them normal people?
Wow.
I feel like I started a really bad stereotype, and I will retract what I said.
Well, it's funny that it's not just with the external users or clients. It also comes with, so from my experience, I've noticed it also comes back to even just internally. So let's take, for instance, I'm working for a company, right? I'm a developer. You find usually developers to actually communicate to a business person on what they are doing and what they need to do. It's quite difficult. The difficult, business person will be like, from our business model and what we're trying to achieve, I don't think this is in line with what we are trying to do. What the tech person is trying to say, you know what, if we do this, we might actually see high revenues or high returns of our clients or with customers, users. And then that is not even the end of it. So tech people have this whole enmity with finance guys for a reason, because once they are saying we need these platforms and we need to pay for them, the finance guy will be like, I don't see why I should be giving you investing, the funds to purchase this. Like, why should I purchase this? And it comes back to being able to communicate the technical aspect of these platforms and tools to a finance person to say, we really do need this for our productivity. So hence a middle person who understands both sides and will be able to listen to the developers and say, oh, okay, I get it. Then sits down with the finance person to say, we actually do need these things. These are the benefits we shall have. Then goes back now to the administration guys, you know, the CEOs and the likes, and explains, you know, from your vision and aims and whatnot, this will be in line.
In their language.
In their language. No,
yes.
So like a translator.
Yes.
This communication feels like it's cut across so many silos. I honestly feel like being a product manager is a headache.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you are to be a product manager, I think you must really enjoy it.
So for me, why I really got into it is because coming from a developer part, I noticed I would get misunderstood, especially from the finance part or the administration part, when I'm trying to explain that I need ABCD for me to be more productive or achieve this goal that you've given me to achieve, you know. And I was like, okay, so if I'm facing this problem, how many others are facing this issue? And unfortunately, in our Zambian environment, there are very few companies that have actually realized that they need a product manager. They actually end up saying they need a project manager and not a product manager. I would observe how he would talk to the different stakeholders, be it our CEO, be it our users, you know, be it our finance guy. And I was interested as to how he would manage to transition from talking to me, a developer, telling him, oh, I have created this API and blah, blah, blah. And
then
he's
his job.
is doing
not,
this and
not
that.
Eyeing his job, but I was fascinated at how he was able to communicate with the different stakeholders who are working towards providing a particular product.
Yeah.
You know, so when he left, I remember I walked up to to our director then. I was like, I just told her, I sat her down, I was like, you know what, I've been observing what he's been doing, because they couldn't find another person. They realized that they needed somebody who understood all these other parts, not just one who, so I need these tools and yeah, these are the deadlines, let's go ahead. So I just sat her down, I was like, you know what, I have been observing what he's been doing, give me a chance. So I'm a daredevil at times. I told her, I was like, I don't have the papers here. We both know, but allow me to learn. And the good part is she was the kind who really invested in our education aspect. So she actually pointed me to the courses that I could do. I started doing a course on agile project management on Coursera, and I started reading up on product management. Started the job and I liked it. Then after that company, I went to another company. Now this one was strictly product management.
I got the role,
and this particular company, them, they even knew what it meant to be a product manager and not calling it a project manager. And that also added on more skills to, you know, to what I have, and I enjoy it.
So are you officially a product manager?
It's because language. I enjoy it. Yes, it's a second language for me.
Oh, that's deep.
This is just really interesting, you know, because I feel like a lot of us, like, are stuck in, there's a lot of these, I won't call them, there's all these roles that are kind of like ignored and misunderstood, and it causes a lot of like confusion around many different teams. Because I think if we don't have like this intersection, like you're calling it, I've been on such teams,
especially in tech. I feel like a lot of roles are vaguely defined.
Some are vaguely defined for a reason. I think I was reading on something that it's not really like a role that's vaguely defined. It's more like a culture. And I think I was telling Cynthia about this culture yesterday. Yeah, we're talking about like the famous Netflix culture deck and how it kind of moved away from the traditional form of HR and gave more responsibility to like employees, for example.
Yeah.
Like instead of strictly defining what your role is, they give you a bit more flexibility. And they sort of give you more responsibility to be aware of what you need to do and when you need to do it.
Don't you find that to be a little bit more confusing? Because I work for a company where IT and HR are what? One department, shared services. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
Sorry, say that again.
Shared IT services. Yeah, IT and HR, like hand in hand.
Oh.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I think that's something worth diving into. Maybe we can look at finding people that are interested in this kind of area and like great opportunity to send us messages, like 1 minute long messages, link in the description. Like I think I'll find every opportunity to ask people to send us messages, because like I feel like it's a really great way for like submissions and that sort of thing. So if you know something about shared services across industries, HR, IT, like Wesley's company does, that's like really interesting. I'd love to know more.
There's actually a lot of companies, because you find like for some and mostly banks, IT and accounts, IT and finance, that's a shared service.
Yeah, even IT and marketing actually, when I think about it.
Yeah.
That's really, really interesting. You know, coming back to the whole idea of, you know, product management and that sort of thing, I think I'm actually really interested in how like how it really works. Like, how is the communication across the different teams, Cynthia? Like, what communication channels did you previously use, or like would you think are most effective in terms of communicating this sort of like agile approach?
So that one, I'll say it depends on, again, on your environment. I'll use my experience. I don't want to, if I was a prophet, I would have said prophet liar. Why lie?
Wow.
Did you just call him like
that? No. That is not a real word.
It's been a thing.
That is a made up word, Cynthia.
Okay, no, getting back to the topic.
That's a good one.
It is a good one. Prophelai.
Prophelai.
You know where I see. Okay, so I'll combine all my experiences. Firstly, all the three companies I have worked with where it's under product management, we've really utilized Slack.
Slack.
If the Slack guys are listening to this, well, apparently your platform is quite used. So we, where I'm working right now, we've gone as far as each project has its own channel.
Mm-hmm.
And from when you get a project...
Each project, like each part of the product?
Sorry, product. Okay. Each product, so we build for companies. So each product has a channel.
Okay.
And in that channel, from the initiation, we'll actually put in the proposal.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put it in that channel to show the proposal, the features that have been proposed. So on each step, when eventually we start now doing the ideation, where we even do the HCD process, the human-centered design. For people who don't know that, it's where we engage.
It's very funny.
I actually want to dwell on this for a little bit. Yeah. The whole idea of like a human-centered design.
Yeah.
Like running through, because there was like well, the Slack chat that happens, I think, every 2 weeks, right?
Uh-huh.
In one of the Slack groups I'm in. And one time, I forget his name, but this guy from Kenya who's like he's really interested in like design thinking and that sort of thing. It's like a big deal.
It's not Wither, no?
No. Anyway, like when I remember his name, I'll put a link in the description.
I was almost remembering and yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so like when I remember his name, I'll put his information in the description. So like the whole aspect of designing for like the user first, I don't know, like it's good, but it seems too perfect. Like at what point, like run me through like the steps that you guys went through in terms of like human.
Sorry, seems too perfect. Like
no, I just wanted to run us through like the steps of human centered design, and then like we can have a little discussion around that because it's
vague for you. Okay, so from Joe will also come in because he's done that before recently, which made him scratch his head. So what we do is, so let's say, for example, we get a client and they give us, okay, so I want a system and this is ABCD. What example will I say? Which example can I give? I'm trying to find an actual product example. We can use.
Messaging app, a local messaging app.
Okay, so let's say you want to disseminate information to the people in what we call the lower income, the lower income citizens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you come to us, you say, okay, I want an app, but I don't know how, I just simply want to educate them on ABCD, but I don't know. I'll give this example. I want to give them information on how they take their dosage for ARVs. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Then you bring it to us. For us, what we'll do first is we'll ask you what the idea you have behind it. How have you thought of how you would like to disseminate this information? Do you want it through text or do you want it through an actual Android app where one, you know, downloads and then they log in and they're able to see different sections? Or do you want it to be coming via USSD, not bulk SMSs? Would you need some response from the user? Would they be inputting some data that you want to then receive and store, or it would be just a one-way thing? You give them the information, they read through, and it ends there. So those are the questions we would ask the client. But then even when they give us those answers, we will request that they give us chance to talk to their potential users. So we'll ask them, what is the scope? Who are the users you'd like to target? Mm-hmm. Are there people in the rural areas, or is it in the urban areas, or is it the middle class? When they give us that, we have a way of, you know, selecting the potential users depending on the description they've given us, right? Mm-hmm. Then we'll do what we call focus groups. So they're focus groups where you bring them in groups, you ask the users questions. If I were to disseminate information to you, what would be the best for you? You leave it open, and yeah, that's the other thing. Don't close them up. So if I come to you, Mukum, and I'm doing a game, I should not come and say, Mukuma, would you like a game that will give you hints as you go along the way? I'm already leading you. So I should say, Mukuma, if I were to make a game, what would pop out for you? What would make you come back and play it every day? Then there, I'm leaving it open. You give me all the ideas you have. So don't don't restrict the interviewee, if I may, or the interviewed, closed or restricted environments, because there might be ideas they might give you that you never thought of. So at that stage, we actually say there's no dumb idea. At that point, an idea that you think is dumb might actually come out to be a very valuable idea later on as you go on with the process. So there's focus groups, or you can do one-on-one interviews, or you can do questionnaires. But we all know questionnaires don't quite work out well, because very few people will actually sit down and start reading through your questionnaire. And then what we do is we actually ask if we can record, in case you forget some aspects of the interview. So you can actually ask, you record whilst you're asking them questions. You record and you still take your notes. Then from there, it's a matter of consolidating what you have found. After you consolidate, it is usually advisable you come up with at least three prototypes. Don't come with one, come with three. Then when you do that, take it to them. These are the three from what I collected from all of you guys. These are the three possible options.
Which one sits best?
They run through all of them. Then they should give you feedback on each. There are times when you find there will be one that will stand out. So that's the one you adopt. But there are times when you find all three have unique features that stand out. So then you will have to combine and make one. Or maybe there will be two that will stand out. You have to combine and make one. So those are decisions that you have to make now. Then you go back. Now you make the final prototype, you still take it back. So the whole process of HCD is to involve the user as much as possible. You don't want to preempt what they might need, because then you end up developing something that won't be used.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's close to home.
Again, adding
close
on.
To home.
I had an experience with.
Adding on, when we like do a rollback during the infancy of machines, systems being discovered, and then we're like, wow, and all that. You find that there's this trend of people fighting with the system. Yeah. So that's the idea. That's the major thing why there's a user-centered design. It's to get rid of that. You don't want a product that you roll out a product, and then two to three days or 4 days, and then you find that people have to fight with the system, because you didn't take the system to the users. You were forcing people towards
to use
the
it.
System.
Yeah.
Yes. So you find that it becomes like bureaucracy, rules. Okay, if you want to use the system, this is how you're supposed to do it. This, and that.
Go to school first.
Yeah, kind of. So somebody has to learn, and then it just becomes like people don't like using the system. They end up using it because they have to. Yes, but the system isn't something that they would like to use.
Yeah, that's deep. I think I'm more of an advocate for user-centric design. And this really hits close to home, because this is a very important aspect that a lot of us overlook. What I really found fascinating about user-centered design is that the user is front and center.
Yep.
So I worked on a project where I think, I don't know if it's still ongoing, but a project for a sexual reproductive app. And someone was talking us through design thinking, and he walked the whole organization through it. He's like, guys, this is very important. We need to sit down and go through this process.
Yes.
And it was just so, you know, it was so motivating to see how you have the different personas. So you have different boards, you know. So this age group is there. This
this gender is there, and you know, you learn from them.
Yeah,
you learn from them. The developer actually learns from them. It's no longer my way or the highway.
Yes,
sort of a relationship. So
there's always something unique.
And you're like, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I could do that. I could put that component in. It's building the project first. Yeah. It's saying, guys, here's it.
Use it.
Actually, with my rule is, if you are doing, you are handling any project, when we ask you questions about that project, you're supposed to know how like become part of
the project,
of the project itself. Yes. So if I'm doing something, let's say for maybe HR, if I'm done with that project, I'm supposed to know what goes on in HR. Because if you say who would best design or implement this system for somebody, it's the very person you're designing for, not so. Yes, it's only that they can't do it. You have to become those people for you to know what they want.
Actually, he's actually just said what I wanted to add on. So another form of you getting the aspect of the user, what they would need, is shadowing. Where you actually, I had to do that for it, for farmers when I was working on an app for farmers. And we literally had to go and walk the life of the farmer.
Yeah.
You actually go there and see what they do from morning to evening, how their day goes and what are the struggles they face. Because only then you realize, oh, okay, so there's even this or there's that. But when you're just seated in your office and you're thinking, oh, there's a farmer, so obviously they travel so many kilometers to the market. But like in between that, what happens before they actually even load their crops in that truck, taking them to the market, what happens? So shadowing, that is what is talking about, where you actually become the user and live their life and see the hassles and the needs they have.
What happens if I'm a single developer?
There are most likely your shadowing part might not work as much, but then you would have to utilize the focus groups and the interviews, the one-on-one interviews. But then again, may I say, HCD process does not come at a cheap price.
No, it doesn't.
It does not come.
It doesn't sound cheap.
It does not come at a cheap price. But there's a saying. It's not even for HCD process. It goes across the board, especially for us who are doing software development. It's better you invest a lot of money in the research, the designing, and making sure that the product is what as it is needed to be. And invests less in development. Than you do a quick research and develop, then find out it's not something they need, and then you have to go back and do the stuff again.
Which tends to be costly.
You spend even triple the amount.
And if you're handling a number of projects, meaning you're lagging behind.
And there'll be the finance guy saying you've spent it already enough. Yes. Sorry, finance guys.
The finance guy, yeah.
There's this trend, I don't know, where with us developers it's like, oh, there's this new project and immediately you jump into coding. Yeah.
Yes.
It's
I did that this week.
Sorry. Yeah, you jump on that.
Jumped into it, and a few days later, that thing was cancelled. And I looked at the stuff I'd done, and I was like, crap, I might as well upload this on GitHub.
Open source it.
Well, at least you've got it on GitHub.
Yeah. So what are we saying? They teach you how to code, it becomes interesting, and with all they say that if all you have it's a hammer, whatever you see, so what, it's a nail.
Yeah, bang bang.
I have my Python on my hands, so whatever they give me, Python. It's like it's Python. You've seen. Yes, but the idea is we should invest more in design, because it's at the design stage that you can know whether this is going to work or it's not going to work, and then it's easier to rectify any issues that come up during the design phase. So if you miss that stage, you will develop something, but you find that you missed out something. Uh-huh. Yes, because also you have to be careful with users.
Yeah.
You talk to them this day, they tell you this, this other day, but there's just one thing that they're not telling you. There's always something that they haven't told you.
Yeah, true. That's very true.
Yeah.
I remember reading a headline some time back, and I don't know why it's really hitting close to home now. And the headline was something like, was Steve Jobs a misunderstood product manager?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he embodied the term even before it was, like, you know, well known.
No, but it means he really understood the fact that I need to build for my users and not me building for me and then forcing it on them.
Exactly. I think he's, for me, he's the greatest definition of a product manager.
Look at Apple products.
Brilliant. User
it's just
first.
An extension.
It's just seamless.
It's not like an extension of you.
I am only going to say this once.
Elias, you will be proud, Elias.
Only once, yes. You're going to say this only once.
Only once.
Yes.
You know, Apple is really good at selling you even stuff that's substandard because they're good at marketing, basically. I think a lot like Elias always says, I don't know, Elias, I'm representing today.
Elias will be happy about it.
They sell you the experience, and the experience is good, even if it doesn't really change from year to year.
It's because they invest in their user research, and they know the experience you want to have.
All I saw was a bunch of new emojis. You know
but
what I
you
mean?
Still loved it.
But let me finish. Let me finish. That's where I'm going. Let me finish. But that's something that people love.
No, it's not even the emojis. Like, to be honest, when I saw iOS 13, I was like, maybe I could buy an Apple device again.
Wow.
To be honest. Fine. That's what I thought. For me, there was something that I found impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, the volume, you know how, like, how crappy the volume, like, the volume bar is when, like, guys, like, the new update, it looks really nice. And I, just because of the simple things, I could actually, I actually get why they are so excited about dark mode. Like, yeah, we've enjoyed dark mode for a while. And then you guys finally get it, and then you actually see them and how they've implemented it. It's actually really dope.
Yeah, look, I broke my phone like 2 weeks ago. I broke my other Huawei phone 2 weeks ago. And the only available phone to me at that point was an iPhone. I've been using an iPhone for a week, and I was the definition of an Apple fanboy from the three.
This is my confession. I am using an Apple a laptop now.
Bro.
Confession.
How long has this been
confession?
It's close to a month now.
Yeah. We don't see it here.
No, but generally, this is the trend. Like, most of my developer friends, right? Are okay with using a MacBook or something.
Yeah.
Just
it's not the phone.
No.
Yeah, but look, I went back to the phone and I remembered how seamless it was for me to do whatever I wanted.
Okay, no, I have not reached that stage for the phone yet.
With the phone.
It's an extension of you.
Exactly. Look, it's as simple as the interactions.
Now we've got into another discussion.
Yes. Which we'll keep for another day.
We had
when Elias is here.
If anyone wants to get like an in-depth conversation, like where the genesis of this entire conversation is, it's episode 2. Ecosystem lock-in. Like, this is basically where this conversation stems from.
And apparently,
and 16
we never
episodes
get
later,
over.
We're still talking about the same thing.
Every episode. Actually.
Yes.
It comes up.
Wow.
Amazing. Anyway, back to product management.
Wow.
Anyway, like, at what point? Like, you know, the problem is a lot of us, like, have these ideas on our own. We may have the knowledge, you know, design thinking, all that stuff. You may not have the resources. You may not have the time as well. For example, you may want to cut corners.
Yeah.
What corners can I cut, Cynthia?
None.
The only corner that you would like, what you want to cut, is the design. Phase.
But even that's
one
I'll
that you usually
no.
cut. Yeah,
don't.
But it's like you're shooting yourself.
Imagine if the Apple guys cut short on the design. I mean, like I mentioned, each idea,
Johnny Ive, shout out to you.
You know, like each idea, there's no dumb idea, even for the volume bar. I guess if I was so skeptical, I'd be like, seriously, guys, like the volume, like you want me to change
that
for
them
you
to implement.
But they listened to their users and they were like, okay, we're still going to do this. And you see the smiles, like, look at.
Yeah.
Yes. Shall we not mention names?
Yeah.
Because two old people are Lexus. So.
Okay. Of course.
You know what, Mukuma, there was no need to bring that up.
Well, is there any need to bring anything?
Dear listeners, Wezi is yet to give me my Alexa. If you remember the episode we did right after my birthday, that Alexa has not arrived yet.
I have no words.
I am working on it. The next episode, I'm ordering it here, Codecast.
Mm-hmm.
If you're listening, if I don't order it on the next episode, I owe you.
Wow. I hear you, Cynthia. I hear you.
Anyway, you know, I was playing a lot of devil's advocate in this episode because it's things that we appreciate but don't really appreciate. Like, we see this a lot. Like, you know, like, the state of the Zambian ecosystem, right, the startup ecosystem right now is think of an idea, build, push to market, and then do your human-centered design when your product is already in the market. I don't know. I don't know if that becomes invalid. I don't think so. Like, I feel like certain things could work well that way.
I feel it makes that's what leads to most of our local companies using more money. So imagine they first build. So this is not even about software. It's just any product. It's
mobile money.
You come up with the product. Then you employ, there are now these research companies, right? Mm. You employ a research company and then they start going around asking the already existing users, by the way, how the product is. Mm. Then when they realize that it's actually not working out, they have to go through the developing of that product again. When they would have actually cut down on that process if they did involve the researchers right in the beginning to see, is this something that actually the users out there need? And is it exactly as what they would require it to be? So I really hope our local companies will think of this. It's just not for software development, guys. It's every product and service.
That's deep.
You can come see me if you want help.
Where is this going?
And I'm the one that charges consultation.
Where is this going?
Wow.
Anyway, this is really interesting. I think at some point it would be nice to have like some kind of like, I don't know if we can call it like workshop or like just something that kind of teaches people this side of the development cycle. Because we have a lot of people now that are setting out to build their own products.
Mm-hmm.
We may not be building products for other companies or other individuals. You may be building internal products, for example. Like, how do you set about doing it the right way? So that's really interesting. I'd like to do more, like, reading and stuff like that.
It seems we've given Mukuma something to think about.
Yeah, look, I'm thinking right now as well. I'm thinking
for your products and services.
No, I'm coming for a job.
For my job?
Yeah.
I feel like there's enough to go around.
there's so many companies that still need product managers.
I still need
my red Range Rover. What's your problem?
So this is where it gets interesting. So we'll be talking about human-centered design and all that, and highlighting the how to go about it. So we call ourselves like we are the custodians of tech, and we are the guys that do cool stuff.
He's about to beat us. Yes.
No.
You can be honest.
No, let's just be honest.
The ones that do cool stuff. So you go to a blacksmith. You give him your requirements, and then he gets to see your requirements, and then no, I need a bigger sword and stuff. And like, no, you don't need a bigger sword. He goes back, comes up with something that amazes you. It's not what you requested for, but we hold it in your hands. It's amazing. So if you what am I saying? If you have the user-centered design, we understand tech.
Yeah.
We know what goes where. We know what this does. So if to the user we get the user's requirement, us we can interpret it nicely so that we know what best fits them.
Prototypes.
Yeah. All those okay. things. Yes, prototypes. Because we understand our world. We're trying to get into the user's world. But from our whatever they want comes from our world, we know what to best give them. Yeah, so now you're talking of embracing the full power of what? Software. So it can even do this. Yes, it can even do that. Oh, yeah, with software we can do anything. Yeah, almost anything, yeah.
Hectic.
Yes.
Hence so, the three prototypes, minimum. No, like imagine you get what they've given you and you also have ideas. You can fuse them in and give them, okay, so these are the prototypes. What do you think? And they'll give you feedback.
I should be writing this down.
I know. It seems like it's a lot of work, but as the more you do it, the more it becomes a habit to a point where you won't even see, you won't even need to put much effort into it. It will come out flawless. Like, it will just be part of you.
Yeah. It's just flowing for you today.
I'm all smiles, guys. Like, this, you guys, yes.
Just flowing.
This is epic.
That work.
Yes.
That's really interesting. I wish we could be here all day though.
Yep.
Why can't we?
No, we can't. I need my bed.
Okay.
it's been really interesting because honestly, I rarely follow, what can I say, really? I do it a lot. I start the process a lot. But then I always encounter like obstacles in the process. Either from members of the team or just like the business end not willing to like take part in the process of identifying what would best fit, you know, the environment and that sort of thing. So it's really interesting to get your perspective on it. I will probably talk to you quite a lot.
No problem.
Me too.
Come with chocolate.
No, no chocolate. No.
Okay.
No.
Is that something we don't know?
Okay. Okay.
It ends there. No. Chocolate.
Okay,
yeah.
No. Can you convert all chocolates to yogurt and fruits, specifically bananas, and if you can find avocados?
Oh
yes.
Man.
Go
back to this conversation about avocados.
Just
come on.
Die.
Just in the last recording, we had like a full blown like conversation about how avocados are from hell.
No, avocados are from heaven.
You know what? Cancelled. You are cancelled.
Who eats avo?
Who? I eat avocados.
Yeah, like which normal person eats avo?
Ouch.
Sorry,
you know,
to listeners.
Maybe we need to subject avocados to human centered design.
And you say
you
that
what?
No more one.
On that note. That's all, folks.
This has been episode 17 of CodeCast. It's been interesting. I will properly explain why avocados should be subjected to human-centered design in another episode, because I actually have a theory about this. Something we forgot to mention earlier, and we'll probably talk about in every episode until it actually happens, is this year's edition of the developer conference.
Yay.
So it's set for September, around mid-September, 19th and 20th, I think. I'll probably put the dates in the description. Like Developer Conference Zambia on Facebook. That's DevCon_ZM on Twitter for any updates. We should have an Instagram account as well, but it'll be interesting to see what the turnout will be this year. So far, the call for papers has attracted a lot of interesting topics and conversations that I would definitely like to see or hear happen at this year's developer conference. So, yeah, and I know Cynthia's particularly excited about one.
Yes.
That's really interesting. We won't talk about it. It's like going to be a surprise when we announce who the speakers are.
Then I'll tell you.
Right.
Wow.
Okay.
Right.
It's that good.
So yeah, we'll post a link to all the social media platforms that you can get information about the developer conference. If you want to sponsor the conference as well, just email CodeCast or like get in touch with any of us and we should be able to facilitate something like that. So if you want to get in touch with us on CodeCast, we're at CodeCastZM on every platform, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn as well now.
Instagram.
Yeah, pretty much. We're on 11 platforms, including TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Breaker, Radio Republic. Like, we're pretty much everywhere except SoundCloud. So listen to all our previous episodes then, and thank you for listening. One more thing. We actually quietly rolled out a website.
Yay, it was open source.
Yeah, basically. So if you're interested in doing work on that and building that platform, send us a tweet or a DM and we'll set something up. So thank you for listening, guys. It's time for the plug session. Elias is in here, so it's not supposed to be dramatic.
Yeah. No crazy username.
This shouldn't be hard. This shouldn't be that hard.
Wesley, you want to start?
At the Zambian underscore geek. That's it.
Where is that? Is that Facebook Zambian or Twitter?
I'm not on Facebook. Gosh,
oh, okay. So, yeah. Listeners. Yeah,
so Twitter. Listeners, Twitter handle at the Zambian underscore geek. Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, and everywhere else relevant.
LinkedIn, Cynthia Mlenga. Profile picture, lady with dreadlocks. Twitter.
Wait, yeah.
we are many like, Cynthia Mlengas, believe me. Then Twitter. Twitter, Python Kadisi. Facebook, Cynthia Mlenga. Again, on Facebook, unless you know my face, well, many Cynthia Mlengas.
Again.
Don't DM the wrong one. Don't DM the wrong one.
I think that's about it, yeah.
Wow. Twitter, it's Jobrian, at Jobrian. Then LinkedIn, at Jobrian.
Jory Lai. What?
Yeah.
Jory Lai 45. What?
It's
not familiar. He's not here to defend himself. So.
Jory Lai underscore 45365.
He's not here to defend himself.
We miss you, Elias.
Yeah, we miss you, Elias. So that's Sour underscore Bones on Twitter, Kenan Uma on Facebook. And yeah, that's pretty much all the platforms you can catch me on. And the rest will probably be in the description somewhere.
As usual, description, guys. Description
somewhere. Thank you, Jobrian, for coming through. We appreciate it.
It's been amazing.
Please listen to all our episodes.
Yes. Remember who sits next to you in the office.
I know.
Okay, Codecast, we're out. You've been listening to Codecast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. Visit agoracode.community for more information or like us on Facebook. That's @CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too, @CodeAgora.